have continued rains. We have communities that cannot go into houses or living in evacuation centers.
Philippines typhoon help still needed. It's Monday, January 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online. Visit us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, finding enough homes for refugees. Stitching together a new future. Asia's business of neon lights and carpets. A telescope unfolds. Virtual study returns. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United Nations and international agencies are warning more than 3 weeks after Typhoon Odette struck the Philippines on December 16th that millions of survivors remain in desperate need of emergency assistance. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The typhoon ripped across an enormous area in southern and central Philippines, about the size of Austria, razing thousands of houses and displacing more than 680,000 people. Torrential rains, floods, and fierce winds destroyed hospitals, damaged infrastructure, and knocked out water filtration systems, posing a health hazard for survivors. The United Nations launched an emergency appeal 2 weeks ago for $107 million. To provide emergency aid for more than 500,000 of the most vulnerable displaced Filipinos. Since then, says World Food Program Philippines Country Director Brenda Barton, the number of people needing humanitarian aid has jumped from 2 million to 7 million. Speaking from the capital Manila, she says many areas remain unreachable. Many, she says, still are without telephone communications and electricity.
One out of, I think, 18 municipalities still do not have water. And, of course, we're seeing incidents of diarrhea coming up. We're seeing children begging on streets. UNFPA, as per the press release we issued, is worried about sex trafficking, gender-based violence, etc. And, of course, we as a community are worried about nutrition emergency setting in.
As part of the UN appeal, the World Food Program is asking for $25 million to cover food, logistics, and telecom needs. Barton says the WFP has received only $4.7 million 3 weeks into this crisis.
And the situation, of course, is being worsened now because we have continued rains. We have communities that cannot go into houses or living in evacuation centers. And COVID, just like in other parts of the world, is now, of course, starting to rip through the Philippines with its highly dense population.
Barton says the Philippine government is doing what it can to provide food, shelter, and other life-saving relief to its stricken population. However, she notes support from the international community is required. She warns that without aid, many people will get ill and many will die. She says malnutrition rates among children will continue to rise. If Typhoon Odette remains a forgotten crisis, she says many children will become stunted because of poor nutrition, impairing their growth and development. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You'll find much more on this and all the stories you hear on today's program by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. Check us out on Facebook at VOA Asia. And of course, don't forget to visit us at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. India monitoring bridge being built by China along border. Australian government says Djokovic did not have guaranteed entry into Australia. Hong Kong travel restrictions could have dire consequences. Strong earthquake shakes remote area in western China. Washington reaffirms support for Lithuania against China. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more by visiting us at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Following the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan, hundreds of thousands of Afghans have sought sanctuary and resettlement in the United States. But now that they're here, some families in Wisconsin's two largest cities are having trouble finding a place to live. Nukbat Malik reports from Wisconsin.
Approximately 10,000 Afghan refugees who arrived in the United States are being temporarily housed at Fort McCoy, a Wisconsin military base. Authorities are trying to find them more permanent homes, and about 900 people will be resettled in Wisconsin in six different locations, including Milwaukee and Madison. In September and October, several Milwaukee-based humanitarian organizations and a group of Muslim women paid a special visit to Fort McCoy, which was closed to the media. Sheila Badwan of the Hanan Refugee Relief Group, a community organization that works with resettlement agencies, was among them. She says that in an unusual process, refugees are increasingly being handed over to aid organizations and relocation agencies.
So it's not the normal program that is used for refugee resettlement. And so that's been, you know, a strain, I think, on not just, you know, community organizations that work with, but also really the resettlement agencies, you know, across the board.
These organizations must first locate a good home for the refugees. But these refugees, who have a different status from others who have been given asylum, do not have as many resources available to them, and that's impeding the resettlement process in Milwaukee and Madison.
The vast majority of them have the title of parolee, which means that after they've been here about a year, they have to actually ask for asylum. And the asylum process is really a horrendous process. It's a very difficult process.
Jewish Social Services, a non-governmental organization based in Madison, is prepared to welcome 75 Afghan refugees, but resettling newly arrived refugees can be challenging.
They don't have any of those things that landlords typically do require and ask about on application. We don't sign leases for people. We help them to sign their own leases. So that requires landlords to be flexible in that way.
At this point, we need housing. And so it could be all parts of Milwaukee, different parts of the region that has available housing so that we can place these individuals.
But finding the right rental properties is difficult. Agencies need a home that not only meets the family's needs, but also does not financially strain them.
Milwaukee is a city that has a shortage of housing, especially affordable housing. A lot of the families coming in are very large families, meaning that they may need something more than a three-bedroom. There's a limited amount of three bedrooms, limited amount of houses within an affordable price range.
So what we're doing this time around is that we are securing apartments, any apartment that we can, and we're securing it ahead of time to be able to place people in when they do arrive rather quickly. That presents a financial challenge for our agencies.
In Wisconsin, some private rental services like Airbnb are trying to help. They are working to connect resettlement agencies with people who can provide some of these families with inexpensive lodging. Nukhbat Malik, VOA News, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, how some refugees are stitching together a new future for themselves. Happening now in Asia, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi was in Sri Lanka Sunday seeking to advance Beijing's ambitious Belt and Road Initiative as the island nation tries to rescue itself from a foreign currency and debt crisis. It's partly due to infrastructure built with Chinese loans that don't guarantee revenue. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great to start off a brand new week with you on VOA Asia. Most refugees who come to the United States have little training and lack in the proper skills to find work. A teenager from the Chicago suburbs decided to address this by collaborating with a local center to teach refugee women how to sew and give them the opportunity to earn a living. Kulsoom Khan explains.
So this is another version of the flare sleeve blouse. This one's a little bit wrinkly, but I chose to go with all pastel colors here because I felt it made like a great spring-summer sort of top, and also with the triangle neck.
17-year-old Nuran Khan has always had a passion for sewing and designing clothes.
In sophomore year, I took a fashion merchandising course through my high school, and then I followed that up with a fashion construction course at the School of the Art Institute, and that really got me motivated to delve into fashion more.
She decided to channel that passion into a good cause. In 2019, Khan started All Sorts, a clothing company. The Chicago area nonprofit teaches refugee women how to sew.
At All Sorts, our mission is to help refugee women obtain a sustainable income to support their family. And we do that by training them to be seamstresses.
All Sorts works with ICNA Relief, Refugee Resource Center in Chicago, to hold sewing classes for the women every week. The women learn to make household items like potholders, tablecloths, aprons, and placemats, as well as clothing. All Sorts then compensates the women for the items they sew and sells them at community markets and on Etsy and the company website. The proceeds from the sales are invested back into the sewing training program. Some of the women take orders and work from home once they finish the program. ICNA Relief also helps the women find full-time jobs at manufacturing facilities or places that need seamstresses.
So I connect them with that organization, send them to interviews, and luckily few of our graduates were able to work there. So it's a win-win situation for everyone, I guess, because it gives me so much pleasure to see our women flourishing.
Many of the program's participants are earning for the first time in their lives. Badiha Adali came to the U.S. from Morocco in 2018 and took the sewing class last year. The death of her husband left her with three children to support by herself. She now works for a local social services organization sewing uniforms for chefs.
Are you happy that you took this class?
Yeah, I'm very happy.
There are six participants in the class right now. Burmese refugee Kin Kin Hate is one of them. She is learning new skills and sewing techniques and says she would definitely recommend the program to other refugees from her country.
Yeah, good program. I like it. And I think it definitely builds some confidence in them. And of course, you know, being a very new to this country, it boosts their morale that they can be independent, they can be self-sufficient.
ICNA Relief has seen several Afghan refugees seeking help as more people make their way to the U.S. in the wake of the Taliban takeover of the country. Cosmi expects more Afghan women to join the sewing program in the coming months. Kulsum Khan for VOA News, Chicago.
Now that you've heard the story, see it by following us at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen put the Association of Southeast Asian Nations 5-point consensus for peace in Myanmar back on the regional agenda during his 2-day visit to the country. Hun Sen did not meet with Aung San Suu Kyi and was sharply criticized by human rights groups as legitimizing the military leadership and as a tool for Hun Sen to deflect criticism from his own human rights records. This is VOA Asia. We have so much more to come on VOA Asia. Right now, neon lights are bright in Asia, and keeping feet on the carpet are the topics on this week's VOA Asia Business Scene, which you can check out every week on YouTube. And I'm making a guest appearance today on our online weekly feature. Hong Kong was once world famous for its neon light shop signs, but many old masters took their secrets to the grave. Now a generation of tech-savvy, globally connected young artists are trying to keep the trade alive. Karen Chan describes herself as a neon nomad. Better known by her professional artistic name, Chan Kalun, she has long been fascinated by the kaleidoscope neon lights that bathed Hong Kong streets in a warm glow. But finding someone who might teach her was far from easy. The trade has long been dominated by masters, Sifu and Cantonese. who guarded their knowledge even as neon gave way to cheaper, more efficient LED lights, and city officials began clamping down on unsafe hoardings. New family members wanted to take up a skill that was becoming redundant, so many masters died without passing on their knowledge. Neon artist Karen Chan.
If you have some very valuable skills or knowledge, you should be spreading it around so that it could live as well. So I think sometimes overprotection might be a cause to allow the crafts to die.
Undeterred, Chan turned to the internet and traveled to places such as Amsterdam and New York to learn from artists there. Chan's current project, called the Neon Girl, involves her working with half a dozen neon light masters around the world to create six distinctive pieces. Four Afghan brothers have hauled their family's carpet loom out of storage in the desperate hope of earning a living as the nation's economy teeters on the edge of ruin. The Haidari brothers now spend their days sitting abreast on a squat bench, as generations of the family did before them, weaving the complex rugs for which Afghanistan is famed. They work long hours each day, keeping a brave face, even though there is no guarantee they will have anyone to sell their carpets to. The hardline movement's austere interpretation of Islam, however, has largely put an end to the lavish betrothals so loved by Afghans, and the family's enterprise collapsed. Kabul carpet store owner Kabir Rauf.
This time is not a good time for carpet because there's no foreigners, no export, no import, nothing. Everything is closed.
Around 2 million of Afghanistan's 38 million population work in the carpet sector, according to Nur Muhammad Nouri, who heads the National Carpet Makers Association. But he says demand has taken a sharp hit since the Taliban's takeover sparked an exodus of expatriates working for international organizations. Afghan rugs, from intricately woven silk Persians to the simpler woolen tribal kilims, are sought after around the world. Making headlines in Asia, Australia's New South Wales state reported 16 deaths from COVID-19 Sunday, its deadliest day in the two-year pandemic. Australia's most populous state already has 200,000 people in isolation and reported more than 30,000 new cases. New South Wales Health issued a statement allowing essential workers to return if they do not have symptoms. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, after launching its next-generation space telescope, NASA scientists are marking major milestones in its progress. Plus, a new space plane arrives at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
Liftoff. After successfully launching the James Webb Space Telescope, NASA engineers began the painstaking task of unfolding the giant observatory. Webb's primary mirror is a golden honeycomb made of 18 pieces spanning 6.5 meters. The space agency met a major milestone by extending Webb's secondary mirror, turning it into a true telescope. Webb is the successor to the Hubble telescope, and while Hubble captures images much as our own eyes see them, Webb sees the infrared spectrum, the difference shown here by NASA. Part of Webb's mission is to seek signs of life beyond our solar system.
Astronomy isn't a laboratory science. We can't go to a planet and turn it around and pick it up and taste the atmosphere. So it's almost like, blind people sampling an elephant, trying to figure out what's going on. And like, the more senses we use, the better idea we'll have of what's really going on with these phenomena.
The space agency says Webb's infrared capabilities will take us back closer than we've ever been to the Big Bang, the creation of the universe.
It's a time machine. It's going to take us back to the very beginnings of the universe. We are going to discover incredible things that we never imagined. And isn't that typical of this team, where the impossible comes possible?
Unfolding the telescope's mirror came after NASA deployed Webb's sunshield, the tennis court-sized barrier made of membranes the thickness of a single strand of human hair plays a key role in keeping Webb's instruments cool from the scorching sun. The space agency deployed all five membranes with thousands of moving parts in what NASA called a marvel of engineering, as all previous tests were done on Earth and not in space. The sunshield will keep Webb's instruments colder than negative 230 degrees Celsius. Finally, a retro-designed space plane could usher in another new dawn in commercial space travel. The Dream Chaser recently showcased at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and it's being developed by Sierra Space, the spaceflight wing of defense contractor Sierra Nevada Corp. The Dream Chaser is currently under contract with NASA for supply missions to the International Space Station, but can be configured to carry as many as six astronauts. The reusable craft is expected to make its maiden space voyage by the end of the year. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Amid the concerning rise in COVID cases, a number of universities in California have canceled their in-person classes and have gone back online. Kristina Shevchenko spoke with several international students about the difficulties of learning during the continuing pandemic. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Most California university students were happy to get back to in-person learning in the fall. But the COVID Omicron surge has forced many California universities to resume online remote learning. Derek is from China. He lives here at one of the buildings of the University of California Los Angeles Cooperative Housing. It's Derek's second year at UCLA studying anthropology, but so far he's been in the classroom for only one semester.
I do very much enjoy being on campus with everybody. I enjoy the company, I enjoy the social life, the social aspects. I like the feeling of being in classrooms, of walking from class to class. I feel more motivated to study when I'm on campus. I feel I'm getting a lot of things that I would not be getting if everything is online.
But now Derek, like thousands of his fellow students, will be returning to his room to sit in front of the computer screen.
In fact, if winter and spring are both going to be online, then by the time I graduate, I've only spent one quarter on campus. So I really think that it's quite sad.
21-year-old John lives at the fraternity house. He says when he and his fellow fraternity members learned about going back online, they all felt extremely stressed.
Nobody learns anything. You don't learn anything. Half of the time, you can turn on your Zoom and you'll just walk around and do whatever.
So far, seven California universities, Stanford and the University of Southern California, among them, have announced they are switching to online classes. On top of that, universities will require proof of COVID booster shots from all students returning to the classroom. But booster shot requirements concern some students a lot less than the price of their tuition. As an international student, Derek pays roughly $40,000 a year for his education, but he believes studying online should not cost him that much.
But certainly as a student, I don't think it's entirely fair that we are paying for as much as we are.
Voice of America has sent inquiries to UCLA and University of Southern California asking whether they have considered lowering tuition costs for students studying online, but has received no response. For now, the universities are only planning to hold online classes for a couple of weeks. That's welcome news for many here.
Even if you're there and being very attentive, it's still not the same as being in class.
Many students here just want to get back to the classroom. Kristina Shevchenko, Anna Rice in Los Angeles, California, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today. Continue with us online. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all great places to follow VOA Asia throughout the day and the week. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.